movie nerd. Can you dig it? In movie nerds we trust. What do you put your trust in? Your currency, gold, or the knowledge? The people are coming at you right now. Movie nerds that think they know one thing more than you do. Just one more thing, one more thing, one more thing that you do that makes them a nerd. Oh, sweet and sour.
Welcome to A Movie Nerds We Trust, the movie recommendation podcast for nights when you're not quite sure what to watch. I'm your host, Christopher James, and I am out here in L.A. with my pals from the On The Mic podcast, Tim Drake, Austin Grant, and Jesse Knight. Hello, fellas.
Hola.
Yeah.
Jesse Prince.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say that.
Yeah, you Jesse know, I Prince skipped the night. Prince. Should I just add
Honor
the
thy middle name.
Hello, and I am your squire.
No, you're the landlord for the mice that live in your home.
Oh, yeah.
I've learned a lot about myself on this trip.
As they run around and go, Mr. Christopher! Christopher James! He's coming! He's coming with the crumbs for the mice!
He wants the rent! No!
No, not the rent! No, the rent check is due! It's Christopher!
We have nothing to offer!
Please take our youngest!
I don't know what the fuck just happened. Anyways, we're in L.A. We were covering the Oscars, and we're doing a nice little episode in our hotel room. We each picked our favorite movies that got nominated for the Oscars. It's been a fun time.
And momentarily won the Oscars.
Yes. Everybody mm-hmm. knows that fast.
And if anybody's wondering where we are staying, our hotel room is inside a leaf blower factory.
Yes.
Very convenient.
It is.
Great rates.
You think
no getting, dust. It's blown away.
You think getting blown in L.A. would be funner, but it's not.
More fun, you mean?
Yeah. Funner.
I like made-up words.
That's fine.
It suits me. I've learned a lot about myself on this trip. I've learned I've got different snores, according to Tim and Austin.
Loud and louder?
Yeah. I've been compared to a baby dying elephant.
Yeah, you the other night you sounded like, or I guess it was the middle of the day, it was like your snore was fighting another snore with Godzilla in the background.
Snore-foo? Okay.
It was a snore battle.
Yeah.
Can't be quite the choir between both you and Tim.
Oh, yeah. Austin decided to Snapchat both of us while we were asleep without our consents.
I know.
I feel very violated.
I was not aware.
You have a Snapchat, though, don't you?
Yeah, I guess I didn't look at it.
Jesse usually doesn't look at it.
Well, no, I was looking for your name, but I didn't see it under like all the J names. Like, there's another Jesse.
Did you look for Prince?
Is it Prince?
Yeah, Price.
Is it Price?
Mm-hmm.
Damn it! That's
see, I'm not the only one.
I really did look for it, but I was like,
you're the only one
on here.
Ah, fuck!
I thought maybe you deleted your account.
We had a great little instance when Tim farted away a family of five, which was pretty great.
Farted away is putting it lightly. He nearly killed.
Yeah. It was bioterrorism.
I thought he ripped his pants. Like, not even as a figure of speech. It sounded like a piece of cloth.
It sounded like a bullfrog coming to life for the first time.
And Tim, it scared Tim. He didn't even know what to do about it. He just kind of like... Oh, when it like shot him up.
I just
bit,
love
and
how
then
Tim
he kept
is
on walking, but
lying on
his maniacal laugh. He's doing
I just
right
love
now
how he's on his stomach on the bed, completely losing.
That's exactly how he sounded yesterday as he did it.
Here we go.
The fart is over a day.
Here we go again.
And he still finds it hilarious.
He's too proud.
It's the sadist in him.
He's been just like walking around with pride. Like, have you guys ever farted a family away? I have.
I feel like the things that have brought him the most joy this trip are the demise of others.
It's so true. Oh, yeah. And the more drastic we make it sound, the more proud he gets.
Oh, yeah.
It was just like a random step up to the curb.
Yeah.
And then
it was
just
enough.
You blasted off. I saw you get at least 3 feet off the ground.
It hurt. I looked it up.
When I said it sounded like a tearing, it did.
We got to our spot where we needed to be, and I looked at Austin and was like, that kind of hurt.
I think he bruised his bottom.
Yeah.
Ow!
Yeah, ow!
I think I heard that after.
I didn't. You and Austin both ran ahead, and you were like, nope, we're just leaving Jesse behind.
No, I literally grabbed Tim and was like, no, you walk behind me.
I yelled at Tim, like, you're making me jog for the first time in months, you bastard.
And then Jesse just, like, stayed behind. We say something to Jesse.
Jesse was the one who's witness to the family, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there was at least three friends.
No, it sounds like a news report. You were there on the crime, were you not? What did you see?
Three friends.
I was
got
just
the
standing there walking across the crosswalk and saw family, and then
people
it happened.
Began to drop. Yeah. The livestock.
I just,
bird
the,
fell
I just
from
saw
the sky.
The look on his face, and he's like, "Oh, that's awful." Yeah, had to walk away. All three of them just
that's
gone.
Awful. Just awful.
I thought it was one of those three. I didn't realize it was 10.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first part once we got into our line. We say something, and Jesse just looks at me and goes, that was you?
If I would have known, I would stay back further.
We also watched the Oscars in our hotel room, as we do every year, which was pretty awesome. I feel like Jimmy Kimmel, like, rocked it as a host this year.
Yeah, he did.
Kimmel was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Just the shit that he was giving Matt Damon throughout the opening monologue.
It's so funny.
When Matt Damon was up there presenting, and he just hands down.
Playing him off.
Yeah, he starts, you pan down, and he's like conducting the orchestra for it. It was amazing. Justin Timberlake's like intro into the Oscars, I thought, was awesome, too.
The whole intro, like Tim said it, he's like, I've never seen a dance party at the beginning of the Oscars.
Yeah, like when you get the whole fucking Dolby Theater just...
Oh, yeah.
These are all people who are, like, professional. They're all dressed up. It's a very formal event, so it's not like it's...
They're wearing jewelry worth as many as, you know, five houses. Worth as many. Worth as much
worth as
five
many.
Houses.
Yes, but they were all up and clapping and dancing and having a good time while it rained candy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty good. And then Jimmy Kimmel takes a kid from Lion and just holds him up like the Lion Kid, which I thought was hilarious. And then, of course, he, you know, ripped on Donald Trump. He, like, live-tweeted on Donald Trump asking if he was okay, which made me laugh my ass off.
Hey, you up?
And then he, like, rips on, like, Meryl Streep, like, oh.
Everybody
so
stand up and applaud the overrated actress Meryl Streep.
I want everyone to stand up, and then they actually did it. I was wondering if it would...
She stood up and then bowed to all of them. That was the best part of it.
Like, she's a good sport.
Well, she knew it was coming, too. I mean, with all the shit Trump has said about her, like, it doesn't matter what you think of Meryl Streep. Like, you cannot deny her body of work.
Oh, yeah. Then we got the nice, inspiration, like, what actors were inspired by certain films, and then you got Seth Rogen with Back to the Future, and he pulled up.
That's a pretty good one.
That's no. You know, I had it and I lost it.
That was like a smoker Santa Claus. What do you want?
You're familiar with those Santas, Chris.
Yeah.
Huh?
Chris is familiar.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Piggly Wiggly Santa Claus as well as a child, which is not something you want to, it's a rabbit hole you should not go down. Then, of course, we had, speaking of Seth Rogen, those Walmart, like, films with the receipts, I thought theirs were the best one, him and Evan Goldberg.
So. Yeah.
What was the deal with that? Like, you vote for it or something?
I think they were just each given a receipt with the same items, and they had to,
like,
tell a story.
A contest of...
You okay there, Jesse?
Oh, yeah.
Jesse just had the most, like, random burp that just, like, bounced his entire body.
That's a good one.
Just a convulsion.
Got some horsepower on that.
And then watching you and Tim react to certain awards, like, that were given, because you guys...
Make picks and...
Yeah.
We dissect the shit out of them.
Some we just don't know, and, like, too much about, but, like, for instance, the makeup one, we were like...
Oh,
for
yeah.
sure, Suicide Squad won't win that. And then they did. And
yeah.
Everybody.
No, it was not just us. It was like, why did this, like, average at best movie get even nominated? What happened? I mean, I actually did like the makeup in it. I thought it was cool. But, like, compared to the others? I don't know.
No, didn't even stand in comparison.
Well, yeah, and then you end up getting those people like, see, everybody, I told you Suicide Squad was good. Now,
really, the only makeup I really liked, I liked Jared Leto's makeup, and I liked Harley Quinn's makeup.
Yeah.
But, like, an Oscar nom, I mean.
Well, we were joking that Killer Croc looked like a shit monster.
Yeah, it looked like a big turd.
Yeah, like the shit monster from Men in Black 2.
I just saw him in the bathroom.
I'm sorry, you saw Jared Leto in the bathroom?
No, I made a Killer Croc.
Oh, great. Poop jokes provided by Tim Drake, everybody.
That's what I'm here for.
Yep. But, of course, we've been talking about this so much during the fucking trip, the end of the whole Best Picture
fiasco. Well, you can't get away from it.
No.
You can't escape it.
Well, it's like we were in line to go to the live with Kelly and Ryan Seacrest, and these ladies behind us were just giving us the worst commentary I've ever heard.
How did you just tie Seacrest into that? That was a really weird go-around.
We were all there, and then I was daydreaming of Seacrest. I mean, we went and saw Seacrest. Yeah. And Chris.
I trailed off there.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. But that show was awesome. It's always cool that we get to go to the Dolby Theater, though, like, right after.
Yeah, it's always such a fun show.
The stage is awesome. It's always awesome. I really liked the one, because it changed this year. It wasn't just one stage. I really liked the one where it was, like, the city buildings. That one
was that was really neat.
Yeah, plus we got very confused by Flo Rida's song.
Yeah, he has a song, new song that's called Cake, and they have, like the background vocals are like, cake, 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 but it just sounds like they're saying cake, 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 cake,
cake,
cake, cake, cake. Yeah.
It sounds like the national Trump anthem.
Lyrics through.
Well, we all were, like, sharing looks to each other.
Probably be all of our
As soon as we heard it, like, I immediately looked to Austin and Chris Trigg and leans forward, and we're just like, it sounds like they're saying KKK.
But they had fun.
Yeah. It was a good show.
Yeah, it was a good show. DJ Khaled brought his iPod, and
ugh, let's not even bring that guy up.
Spun some dinner plates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I honestly think he was asleep.
Kind of think so too. It's like I've been partying
commercial
all night.
Break? Oh, cool. Yeah. What did he say to Kelly? He was like,
I don't know. It wasn't a complete sentence.
She asked him something, and he was like, "Oh, beautiful, wonderful, spectacular."
Oh, like if
and it was like, what the hell was that? Was that
that's the response any DJ gives?
A
like,
comment or was
she
it
asked
a
him
compliment?
If he thought like she would ever be in one of those videos, like a music video.
He was like, romantic, beautiful,
yeah,
because awesome.
He was just leaving to go DJ, something with the Justin Bieber video.
Yeah. Just listen that's something to brag about.
Popped in his head.
The angle I'm at right now, Austin's star tattoo looks like a misplaced nipple. It's kind of funny.
A black nipple?
Sure.
Okay, Tim. Moving on.
So Jesse gets up.
Jesse looks. Jesse's like, wait, what?
I kind of want to see this nipple. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Doesn't look like a nipple, though.
No. I'm not saying it actually looks like a nipple, just like at the angle I'm at.
That's what you said.
It looks like it could be a misplaced nipple.
No.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, yeah, we got off on track big time. So this episode, we're talking about our favorites, our picks from the nominated Oscar movies. Our first one is Tim's choice, La La Land.
No, it was Moonlight.
Lol!
Lol,
lol. Lol, lol, land.
Lol, lol, land.
Yes, La La Land.
The spoof.
No, I'm not joking. It was you.
Oh, yeah, that was...
No, I was...
I was just making sure nobody came and took it away from me.
No, really, I was, this isn't a joke. La La Land is Tim's choice.
It's
no,
my choice.
It's Moonlight, see?
God, right. No, I'm confused.
I was confused, too.
Playing along
with
the joke.
Can somebody get Warren Beatty to come check, fact check this for me?
Yeah.
What's that?
Are we just talking the supporting actress, or... So I picked Emma Stone, right?
What?
Now we're all lost.
Yeah, we're so lost. Anyways, Tim's choice, La La Land. Is what we're talking about first. I fucking loved it. Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone always are great on screen together.
It was
together.
The best picture of the year.
Yeah.
For 30 seconds.
For 30 seconds.
Technically, for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
For two minutes, it was the best picture.
How would you explain it if it was you? Would you be like, because technically they did win an Oscar. It was announced and whatnot.
They won 6 Oscars.
Yeah.
But like... We were best picture for a minute. We even gave an acceptance speech.
Two acceptance speeches.
Held the Oscar on the stage, but then it's taken away. So it's like, they didn't not win. but they didn't win, could you just be like, I'm kind of a Best Picture winner?
Best Picture for a brief moment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Best Picture for a brief moment.
Sure.
It's that a new ca- like it's a new category on IMDb. So,
winner for best winner in a
where it shows the winners, it now has like an asterisk, or it's like 13.5. They've won 13.5 times.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I remember like when I before I went to go see this, Tim very much loves pointing out like awesome things in films, whether it's continuous shots, photography. Also, it's cool seeing like all the spots that we've been kind of around, you know, on La La Land.
Yeah, it's cool seeing all of the spots. Anybody that spends a lot of time in Los Angeles or lives here, you know, you go past them every day. There's, I mean, particularly the mural that is just that's right off of Hollywood Boulevard, which there's no jazz club next to. There's a corner that smells like piss is what's right there. But yeah, there's a lot of fun things that are just very native to Los Angeles. Getting your car towed because it's past the parking time, getting a ticket, anything like that is, if you don't have it happen at least once, you're not a true native. it's the way that the city welcomes you. But there's a lot of great things. You know, you'll never see people dancing on the 405, but
that's true.
But you'll see plenty of them stopped and honking like that.
They'll be dancing on the street corners, but not on the freeway.
Those are called transients in Austin.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought they were just extras who lost their way.
You can find those, too.
Well, that's the thing is, like, this movie keeps getting a lot of shit, but there's mostly from people who've never seen it.
Yeah.
Seen it, nor have any, like, film relation or... Sure. Knowledge of film in general.
And I absolutely love musicals as it is. That's no secret. I've always loved musicals. And I mean, more and more and more over the years, like, musicals have grown on me. I was one of those few people that even with like Glee, like as tacky as so many and cheesy, like I'll fully admit, like that show fails on so many levels, but I loved the musical aspect of it.
Yeah.
And so I could still hang on even in those moments of how terrible so many parts of that were, and I don't care if anybody wants to make fun of me for that. I own it. I've always loved musicals, and La La Land was a new take to an old art that I wish we saw more of.
Yeah.
So, and it was done with such perfection. Damien Chazelle, God, the guy's just, the fact that he's the same age as me, like, kind of kills me, because I'm just like, what the fuck have I done? I was like, he probably started film school around the same time I started film school, and his last two films have, like, been amazing Oscar nominees and Oscar winners.
Yeah, he got Best Director, right?
Yeah, he won Best Director.
Rightfully so.
Oh, yeah.
He did a fan. The cinematography alone in La La Land, is, like, we were talking, like, the color scheme to it as well.
Yeah, the production design's beautiful on it. I mean, the entire opening shot with him dancing on the cars and everything. You know, I sent all of you guys a video, but there's a video out there that shows the way that they had to do all the camera movements to make sure that the actors were hitting all of their marks. And I just saw the other day that there's even like a thing of the rehearsal space that they had set up for that. So, but I mean, they actually shut down part of the freeway to be able to film that scene.
So they did actually shoot it on the freeway?
Yes, they actually shot that on the freeway. And so that's what's just amazing. For one, that they were able to shut down a freeway in Los Angeles.
Yeah. What was the budget for it?
I'm not sure.
I can check it out now.
See, I actually do not normally like musicals. I mean, I like some of the old classics, but I don't have the patience for sitting through all of that singing. It usually gets on my nerves. But I felt like La La Land had a really good balance of
acting and
the storyline. Yeah, acting and the musical moments. They had me because it was really entwined into the actual story.
Yeah, it didn't have that weird like buffer zone some musicals will have to where they transitioned a song. It just naturally kind of went together.
Yeah. Like the only part that was a little even over the top for me, and I think it's one of the areas that people kind of roll their eyes at, is when they go on their date up to the Griffith Observatory and they're floating around and dancing in the stars. Like, yeah, that part I was kind of like, meh. Like, I get where some people kind of, you know, fade off at that point, but even still, I mean, it added to that like magic of the old timey Hollywood movies, you know, the Fred Astaire, the Ginger Rogers type things. But I mean, even the scene too, one of them that I think really stands out and guaranteed is what, you know, helped lock in that cinematography Oscar is when they're dancing up looking over the city. A lot of people think that that's against a green screen, and it's not. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that actually was the Los Angeles sunset. So, when they rehearsed that all throughout the day, and they had about 10 minutes to be able to get two takes in. And, I mean, they fucked that up one time, and, you know, your day's pretty much destroyed. And they did it for 2 days to make sure that they got the right shot. Because when you're filming, you have what's called magic hour, where it's when the sun's setting and it just gives you that little bit of light and that little bit of just like perfect sunset.
It's a really soft light.
Yeah.
That doesn't create too many harsh shadows. Everything is just like beautiful-esque. That's golden hour. Yeah.
And it's a... If you fuck something up in that, like it can destroy your entire day of filming. And I mean, they nailed it. They got it. They had it set for 2 days and they got it in the 2 days. But then, I mean, you've got the same type of thing when Ryan Gosling's on the Santa Monica Pier, and you know, they nailed those shots. They were very precise in how they had to do them. And it just shows the brilliance of the filmmaking within the movie.
Yeah. Budget wise, it was $30 million is what they had budget.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, I honestly kind of expected it to be a little bit more.
I expected like 50. Well,
they grossed, I think, $150 million or more. Yeah.
Yeah, they've grossed about the same amount that Hidden Figures has so far.
Yeah.
Which is funny because a lot of people talked, and I can't remember who it was during some of the pre ABC red carpet coverage. They said, oh, well, you know, it could be Hidden Figures that sneaks in there. You know, they've done over $140 million so far. And the guy was like, yeah, the same amount the La La Land has done. So
yeah,
they've both held very well as far as ticket sales have gone. So my only worry with La La Land a little, because like I had talked with my parents about it afterwards, they weren't too fond of it. So, and I think a lot of people that, and granted, my family, we're a very heavily musical family. But I think a lot of people gets very overhyped for, and if they aren't into musicals, and you're just being told, oh my God, this movie's amazing. Yeah,
it's too hyped.
It's too hyped, and yeah, it's not going...
Any movies that way. You could talk about the greatest movie of all time, whatever that is, too, and if you hype it up too much, then...
Yeah, but I think musicals, it's a little bit harsher on, because it's already an area that a lot of people kind of steer back from. So, yeah, well, you can ruin
also
any movie with
steer
that
back from and are overly critical on, because it's like, well, I didn't like this music. They weren't good at singing. That's not the point. Of course, they could find better singers than Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't have been able to play the role that they played, how they played it.
So my question is, because I haven't seen Moonlight. Have any of
you guys? Austin and I both did.
Yeah, we saw Moonlight.
So what were the... I mean, it was still... Whatever, with the screw up and Moonlight was there.
La La Land's still the best picture in my eyes.
Right, but what about Moonlight was
so great?
Like, argue points for Moonlight being really good.
We'll touch on it real quick since it's not one of the movies we're going over really. But, I mean, Moonlight, there's a lot of just beautiful... I mean, for one, the story of Moonlight...
It's a great story.
Yeah, it's a great coming-of-age story. Well, it follows a young man who, you know, from childhood, his mother's a drug abuser...
This is all in a very poverty-stricken bad area of Miami.
And, I mean, he's kind of taken under the wings of the character that Mahershala Ali plays.
A drug dealer who's selling to his
mom. To his mom. And gives him tries to give him hope, though.
Yeah, he becomes a father figure since there is none for
him.
And then he gets bullied and teased a lot in his upbringing. And then there's three stages.
Because he's a little different. And a lot of kids, you know, call him a faggot and things like that. And there's a lot of harsh things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of the LGBT tones there while he's trying to even come to terms with his own sexuality.
This is him at maybe, I don't know.
16?
Well, before that even. The movie starts and he's probably about 8, 10.
Yeah.
Around there. And then it gets to the next section of the movie where, he's about 16. All that is still the same, but now it's just progressed even more over the years. So there's a nice transition of screenplay and also editing in that aspect, which is why it was nominated for both of those. It was nominated for both of those, right?
Yeah.
And 'cause it transitions very smoothly. And then the acting overall throughout the movie is great. And the story is great. And the directing is great. Really, everything is solid.
There's a reason it's nominated for Best Picture. By no means are we saying it shouldn't have been nominated for Best Picture or anything like that. I mean, it completely swept the Independent Spirit Awards the night before.
I just don't think it has the creative merit that La La Land has. And a movie like Moonlight is made every maybe other year.
Right now it's getting made very frequently.
Yes, right now. And that's just because of like its content of like LGBT or anything like that, but just like the style of movie, like those kinds of movies just get made a little more often. La La Land,
and we love all of them. Like there's nothing wrong with that. La La Land stood
that comes around
on
once in a while.
Yeah.
And it was a once in a while movie, and it had it all, in my opinion.
I'm a little biased because I've only seen La La Land. That's why I figured it should have won. But
I think there's it's the Oscars, and things are political, and things are, you know, so that's also an aspect of it. That's just awards, award shows.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why I was curious, because I haven't seen it, and I mean, obviously it was.
It's a great movie to see. It's a great movie to even own as it comes out.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, like Austin said, in whole, that's what Best Picture should be. It should be everything in whole.
Yeah.
And in whole, La La Land, which is why a chunk of the other Oscars went to La La Land, is because in whole, it was
it
the better film.
It felt like, almost like, if anything, I'd rather have Barry Jenkins got Best Director and La La Land Best Picture. If they're going to like split those two, because it kind of felt like, well, we got to give one to each because they're both great. But it was like, I think La La Land should have won both, actually, Best Director and. But if I had to choose between those options, I would say like La La Land is Best Picture.
Well, I feel like from what I know, because like I said, I've only seen La La Land, it has everything. It's got a love story. It's got a, you know, coming of age story. It's got a nice, you know, fighting adversity.
Which to a degree, Moonlight has all of those too.
Yeah.
So, and I just have to say one thing more, and then we can move past this part, but so many people are looking at it as, oh, if you didn't want Moonlight to win, it's because of race and things like that. If you really are going to take it to those lengths, go fuck yourself. Because it has nothing to do with that at all. It simply comes down to some people like some movies differently. Like Austin and I both said, we absolutely love Moonlight. It is a fantastic, beautiful film.
Truly.
We just don't feel that it met all of the same creative merits as La La Land. Creative merits has not a single fucking thing to do with race, religion, sex, anything like that. It has to do with the filmmaking capabilities.
And you can't give an award because of that.
Right.
Like, the award goes to Best Picture because it was the Best Picture.
Yeah.
So, I hate that that's the controversy.
Yeah, that's become controversy. And just some of the smart-ass things people have said online, if you really think that's what it boils down to, like I said, go fuck yourself. Because that's not.
If you don't like La La Land,
that's fine. That's totally fine.
Great. Well, good for you.
The bad reviews I've heard from it so far, just from like a face-to-face talking to people about it, are people who have not seen it.
Yeah.
Like someone that I work with said, it's like Hollywood's trying to jerk
itself. Either have
off.
Not seen it, or they maybe go see 4 movies a year. And like, you just, I don't know.
Like
you
still
don't know too much about film. So like, you're just kind of dogging on it because.
Yeah. I still very much want to see Moonlight, but I still very much love like La La Land.
And when people say that it's just Hollywood trying to jerk itself off, it is no lie whatsoever. Yes, Hollywood does usually really like movies about itself.
Yeah.
It's no lie. Everybody will admit that. Every critic out there.
You could argue Hail Caesar was Hollywood jerking itself off, and they only got one nomination.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was also just a boring-ass movie. And I love
but
the Coen Brothers.
Point.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's like, sure, you know, Hollywood does tend to like those kind of movies, but there's a reason for that, because no matter what stage you're in, you know, La La Land especially, you know, the stage that Austin's at, the stage I'm at, we can relate very, very heavily. Austin's walked out of those auditions just like, you know, Emma Stone does, where
you went and you just,
you see people look exactly like you. Like, Landon was just on my podcast with all of us, Landon Henneman, and he and Austin have a very similar look. And they even joked that they were auditioning for the same roles that Austin was getting, then Landon wasn't.
I really love those audition scenes with her. Like, it'll cut to her doing
so
random.
Oh, they're so funny.
Yeah.
Especially, like, knowing it and being there, you're like, oh my gosh, I know exactly that situation. My favorite's the one she's reading with that lady, and she's like, no, you be tripping. Or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
So funny.
I really loved the one, too, because after I think it was a producer saw her one-act play, like, he ends up, because she ends up going to her parents' house because no one showed up for that, and then he ends up going down there convincing her to go. So when she goes to read for that because they chose her for it, and it just dims into this monologue, I thought that was, like, one of my favorite.
That's why she was
that was one of those moments that kind of brought a tear to my eye.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. I was just like,
I got a little teary-eyed, too.
It's just like it's that moment that you have to take the chance on yourself, and you have to be able to just leap when you're given those opportunities.
Yeah,
and it does come down to those moments where, you know, when you feel like your back is up against the wall, and you look at it, and you're just like, you know, I think this is it. I think I'm done. Sometimes you don't realize that, you know, that should be a learning mark, and that should be a stepping stone, and not.
Yeah.
You know, you closing the door on yourself. It is what you make of it. You have to take the ball and run. I mean. I'll be the first to say I've failed plenty of times with my podcast, with films that we've made, a show that Austin and I, you know, wrote and developed and filmed. People loved it. We realized it was pure shit, and we just had to move on, and now we're working on the pilot for it again and to be able to pitch towards networks and stuff. But it's you have to learn those things and not be afraid to fail when they come up.
It was so relatable and like heartbreaking when she does like quit on herself and moves back, and she goes to her house and sees all of her like acting awards and trophies she won in high school and all these things that she's just so passionate about. You could tell just from the set design in the room, which is why I won production design, that it was like you saw her entire childhood in the room, you know, and that told you so much information. And then it was like, no, you know, when you watch it, you're like, don't. What are you doing? You're like, stop. Like, don't quit on yourself.
Yeah.
And then she gets that opportunity. And I thought it was really cool, which is another kind of layer to her performance, was like when she does do that last audition and monologue, there was a sense of ease to her. And like within that, I think lies the confidence. But that's kind of the conflict of the character. It's like her trying to find the confidence in herself because she spent years going to these auditions. And I also loved that in contrast to her very first one, which is like the opening of the movie where she's like doing that crying scene. And it's actually like really good.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're like, oh, we don't give a shit. That happens all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I knocked this one out of the park, man. And you never hear from it again. But the one where you're like, all right, well, you just go do it, you end up booking. It's so weird how it works.
That speech she was giving to Ryan Gosling when he like went to go pick her up was kind of heartbreaking. It's like, I've been trying so hard. It's been 6 years. I just want to give up. And he's like, don't.
Yeah.
And they're talking in like the park afterwards. And he's like, you got it. You know, and they're like saying that, you know, kind of realizing that they can't be together. But, you know, kind of saying like they'll always love each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the ending, I think, is...
Oh,
amazing
shot. Yeah. That's we chose it for editing, but what ended up winning for editing? Was it that? No, something else won.
Hacksaw Ridge
did. Yeah, that's right. We thought it would win for editing because of almost purely the ending. I mean, the whole movie as a whole is great editing wise, but the ending had so much like energy to it, and like they had to shoot it like that to have the energy and perform it. But then when you get into the editing booth, there's a certain like pace to it, these montages, these quick things going on, this to that to this to that, and then it builds up to the very end when it cuts back to him at the piano and they have that final look, and it's like, oh, that was all so perfectly done.
Yeah, that whole smile across, like, hey, we didn't do this together, but because of you, this is why I'm here. It's kind of what they both
because both of them have the life they dreamed of because of each other.
Yeah. And you know,
and they didn't have to be together to do that.
Yeah, and when she kind of imagines their life together with it, you know, and she smiles back at him, she kind of realizes that he maybe wouldn't have been able to accomplish his dream, would have been more focused on her, so...
Would have been chicken on a stick.
Yeah. I do like, though, when she, like, walks in and sees the SIDS, the little, like, sign that she designed.
Yeah.
I kind of saw that
coming. Sibs, you mean?
Sabs, yeah.
Sibs?
Sibs, yeah.
Sibs.
Sibs. I kind of saw that part coming, though, a little bit.
Yeah.
But still, I still loved it. And just like, there was some, because people were like in the theater, when I went to go see it with my girlfriend, people were like throwing their hands up like, what? This is stupid. Because then everybody wants a fucking happy ending, because their life's so fucking sad. They have to have a happy ending in order to enjoy a movie.
It was a happy ending.
I felt, too. You know, her, you know, having a callback to the beginning scene.
Not
when
the happiest perfect outcome, but
yeah.
It was still a happy ending.
Well, it's a nice callback to the beginning scene where she's working as a, in the cafe, and an actress comes up, and they're like, oh, it's on us. No. And then it does the tip jar. She kind of had that experience herself. You know, she walks up, she buys a coffee, kind of goes off on the car through the studio. It's kind of cool, too, also walking through Warner Brothers again when we went to Conan and kind of seeing the area where they shot that scene with her and Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, it was fun even seeing that during the movie. It's just like, I've walked down that street many, many times at Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
But La La Land is fucking wonderful.
I loved it. The music alone, I still like that.
I've been meaning to get the piano book for it. So,
oh, nice.
Because as many musical instruments as I own and play, I would really like to.
Yeah,
sit down with that one because the music is just so fantastic. I never buy soundtracks, and I actually bought that soundtrack.
Oh, nice. I always love their chemistry. Like, they have a very romantic, loving chemistry, but also when, like, he's ripping on her at the party where he's in that 80s band, I thought was pretty hilarious.
And he's honking at her on the freeway.
Yeah.
That's good.
Just a little fun facts. The audition scene where the casting director interrupts Mia's emotional performance to take a phone call, actually inspired by one of Ryan Gosling's auditions in real life. So that
where she gets cut off with the phone call?
Yeah. Emma Watson turned down the role of Mia due to scheduling conflicts with Beauty and the Beast, while Ryan Gosling turned down the role of the Beast in that film to appear in this, coincidentally, both musicals.
That's funny, but I'm actually very happy with both.
Yeah, me too.
I honestly can't picture Emma Watson in that role. I love Emma Watson, but I cannot picture her.
Yeah.
And though they're like, but we still need an Emma.
Yeah. Damn it. What other Emmas do we have? Roberts?
So because the director wanted to shoot the scene in the tradition of old musicals without cuts or editing, Ryan Gosling practiced playing the piano and played it himself in one take on his first day of shooting. Co-star John Legend, who was a classically trained pianist, said he is jealous of how quickly Gosling learned to play so well.
Speaking of John Legend, too, even his performance during the Oscars, it showed, if anything, to me, to everybody that was like, hey, you know, they weren't the best of singers. That was like, I love John Legend's voice. I think he's a phenomenal musician.
Yeah.
It was too perfect to me.
Yeah, I agree.
It was just too perfect, and that's not how that song is supposed to sound. It's supposed to have its flaws because it shows the human nature of the people that, you know, that are writing these songs and putting on this art.
Yeah. So the line in the film that's said by Sebastian, "That's L.A. They worship everything and they value nothing," was actually added in by Ryan Gosling himself when he heard his real-life girlfriend, Eva Mendes, mention it as a joke.
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah. I think we mentioned this before, but the crew had a limited time window of 30 minutes within 2 days to film the dusky purple twilight Hollywood Hills dance sequence.
Yeah, yeah, that's the magic hour.
Yeah.
Or golden hour.
I've heard
both.
Yeah. The film score was recorded in the same studio where Singing in the Rain, The Wizard of Oz, and many other MGM musicals were scored.
Just randomly as they're doing this, father was king of the forest.
Let's see. The film was shot in 8 weeks over the course of the summer of 2015. Which for that, like, for as big of a production that was, it's pretty impressive.
8 weeks?
Yeah.
That's fairly normal.
Oh, really? Okay. Ryan Gosling.
It's kind of long.
I bet they...
It's probably because they had some of those shoot days that they had to just rehearse.
I'm sure they shot other stuff in the morning and afternoon.
No, from what I read on some of those days, they had to have everything set because the camera had, like on one of them, 27 points it had to hit. Since it was just a fluid crane shot. And so they had to be able to set that
and block
that.
They only scheduled the one scene for the day?
For 2 days.
Hmm.
So I'm guessing some of those shots were, because of that. Because I mean, you think even like the.
I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that when it's that long. I mean, that is a little longer than normal for something like that. But
okay,
I'm guessing.
For the scale of the musical, though, I bet what I'd be interested in is the amount of like rehearsal time they had before.
Yeah. Yeah, within the pre-production.
How many weeks of rehearsal? Not necessarily pre-production, because that can encompass a lot, but just pure rehearsal.
So the screenplay of the film was written in the year 2010, so we've been working on it for quite a while.
So that was even pre-Whiplash.
Yeah.
You probably had
What year did the Whiplash short come out?
2014, I think?
Not the film, the short.
Oh, the
short.
Film, the short. That I don't know.
Because the film was based on a short that he had done, that J.K. Simmons is in as well.
Thirteen.
Mm-hmm. So Emma Stone is the first actor to win the Academy Award for Musical Performance in a True Musical Film since Barbra Streisand for Funny Girl in 1968.
Wow.
It's pretty impressive. Her overwhelmed speech when she won that Oscar was pretty awesome. Like, you could tell that she's been waiting for it for a long time.
Yeah, she has been waiting for it, and I mean, she dominated. She won all the awards that, leading up to it, which oddly so did La La Land. That's the strangest thing about it not winning Best Picture. It won pretty much every fucking award it was nominated for leading up to it. Won the PGA, won the DGA. Those encompass the majority of Oscar voters.
Yeah. I thought this was interesting. The movie stops being a musical at the moment Sebastian and Mia stop being happy. And the next song was sung at the audition when Mia started feeling joy again. I didn't notice that. Our next movie is actually Austin's pick.
Your pick, Austin?
Hell or High Water.
Hell or High Water.
This is a great cast, too. Yeah. Chris Pine, Ben Foster, Jeff Bridges. It's really...
Oh, yeah.
Really
the cast is solid. And really, I mean, the cast is strong all the way down to even the day player roles.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes movies overlook those, or those parts end up being just not as strong as they could be. Like, I'd say as brilliant of a director as Christopher Nolan is, sometimes his smaller parts in movies, I'm like, that was not very good. You know, I don't know what it is, but in some of his Batman movies, some of the people who have like one scene, I'm like, wow, they were horrible, especially when put up against like someone like Heath Ledger or Tom Hardy or something, you know, they're in a scene with something like that. So Hell or High Water, the cast is great. The director, David McKenzie, who I'm not familiar with his other work. I'm not sure how he came about.
Let's see.
Getting the directing gig for that one. He must have met Taylor somehow, or Taylor knew of his work or something, but Taylor Sheridan, the writer, who I was fortunate to work with last year in his upcoming movie called Wind River, which premiered at Sundance. I'm not sure when it'll be released yet. I think they're still figuring that out.
Right now it's looking late summer, I believe.
Late summer.
It was the last I heard on that. Yeah.
Like August, September.
Somewhere right in there.
In that region. But the story is solid. I mean, I won't like go into explaining what the story is, but the log line is a divorced father and his ex-con older brother resort to a desperate scheme in order to save their family's ranch in West Texas. So there's a couple like themes in the movie. I mean, one which is pretty much universally in every movie, which is like love, and that's, I'd say, more in a brotherly sense though in this movie.
Yeah.
There's no real love interest type roles or anything, which I like. It's not a movie that's like, all right, we got our main concept, but there's kind of some secondary things. How about a love interest, you know? Taylor Sheridan's a smarter writer than that. And instead, it's the characters all have purpose. And another one is like financial situations with banks. And I don't own a house or haven't really been through that process or own property. But there's another big theme of the banks and how they treat homeowners and such. Some of that lingo jargon I'm not too familiar on, so I couldn't really like go into detail on that, but I know it hits on that. And then also it's just like the relationships are really interesting because it's kind of a movie where you follow two brothers and it's clear their relationship, but then you follow two detectives and they have their brotherly relationship in a sense.
I think both pairs really were well together.
The cops were amazing.
Yeah.
They gave a beautiful balance to the entire movie with the relationship of both without really having a ton of crossover with each other.
Right, they don't even come into contact until the last third of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or last fourth, even. Taylor Sheridan's scripts are, like, so simple, and within the simplicity, they can, like, really get, like, just, I don't know, full of tension between, like, relationships or, I mean, there's always, he's such a great balance of, like, there's plot in his movies, and the plot moves forward.
Yeah.
It doesn't get too stuck into the, like, relationships and character developments, but he has those going as well as, like, the plot moving forward. So, he's a smart writer because he writes scripts that are going to be made, for one, and then are going to be seen by a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be movies that a lot of people enjoy watching. I like Jeff Bridges getting nominated. I'd like to see Ben Foster get nominated at some point. I'm not sure this one was necessarily an Oscar nom for him, but I think he's such a strong actor and he's done such a great body of work throughout his career that, like, he should get one.
Just gonna say,
he eventually will.
He will. I think he's one of the best supporting actors out there. Mm-hmm. He can play a lead man, but he's so good at contrasting the lead in movies that, like, he steals every scene he's in. In my opinion.
I've yet to see it, but he was in Kill Your Darlings.
Kill Your Darlings was pretty damn amazing.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite, where I first noticed him was 310 to Yuma, and he's just brilliant in that movie. I love him. It's Charlie Prince. And this was also, I think, the first time we've seen Chris Pine really kind of take something deeper than he usually does.
Yeah, it's cool to see him like that.
He's a great actor. And he's done drama before, but this is the first time I feel like he pushed himself a little bit more. And I've always liked Chris Pine, but now I'm interested to see, like, how far he's going to take his, like, his craft. You know, it's kind of like, not necessarily like, but unto Matthew McConaughey, who had his own career. He's like, career's in two halves, in my opinion, you know?
Yeah.
He had his early career, and now his career now. And it was like when we first saw him in, like, Mud or The Lincoln Lawyer, it's like, okay, now he's starting to do some, like, dramas. And now he's, like, after True Detective and some of these other roles, he's, like, really getting into it.
Yeah.
And I think Chris Pine could do the same. But I love Chris Pine in, like, his comedies as well.
Yeah.
He's really funny.
He was not bad in the, like, Horrible Bosses, too, which, like, I thought his part in that was pretty hilarious.
I didn't see the second one.
It's pretty good. It wasn't bad. It wasn't, like, great or profound at all, but it was still pretty good.
So otherwise it was bad.
Yeah.
It wasn't great or profound, but I watched it.
The grittiness of, like, Chris Pine and Ben Foster's characters in this, I love, because they jump, you know, right into the whole bank robbery. Each bank robbery, like,
oh, the opening, like, sequence is great.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I love the shot choices, too. There's these very, like, I like tracking shots. I'm a huge fan of shots that are in motion, not necessarily, like, planted and there's motion within it. I like things that are moving.
Yeah.
And the opening sequence was great. There's a really cool shot when they're waiting for the person to open the bank, and then the lady finally sneak in there, and there's a shot from, like, behind the counter that, like, eventually captures all of that, and then it moves from behind the counter and out the door, I think, if I remember correctly. And then it, like, follows them all the way to the car or something like that. It was a big one shot that lasted maybe, like, a minute and a half, which is a long time.
Which is kind of funny because the bank teller from the first part of the movie and Ben Foster, they both have been in My Name is Earl together.
Yeah.
So that was pretty funny.
I was actually looking up one because I couldn't remember what the name of it was. The first time I saw Ben Foster was in Get Over It. He plays this little scrawny high school student.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Shakespeare
Right.
Parody.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Of all Shakespeare's works? Or?
No, I want to say Midsummer Night's Dream.
Shit, that's right.
I know he's been acting remember, since he was little.
I couldn't remember if that was him for sure or not, and yeah, it was. That was the first I ever saw Ben Foster.
And the thing I really like about Ben Foster is he's, like, not a formally trained actor or really any institution type of training. He's kind of just started working and figured it out. I'm sure he's had training. I don't really know.
I totally forgot he was Angel.
With some coaches and had his own personal whatever, this and that, but, like, as far as, like, his career, he's pretty much just done it.
Yeah, I totally forgot he was Angel in X-Men 3, too.
I really like it when you can get a story like this where you get really emotionally attached with almost like it's supposed to be the villain, like almost in real life.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like the anti-villains.
Yeah, exactly. You loved them so much, right? Like, they're the bad guys, but...
It's kind of like a Walter White, Jesse Pinkman thing where you're like...
Right, yeah. It's like they're doing bad things, but at the same time...
They're also doing it for
tragedy,
a good cause.
Yeah, the tragedy in the end. Like, he sacrificed himself for his brother... In their life.
And that's what Taylor's... He's smarter. He goes... takes it to another level. Because you could write it as... That's as far as it goes. Where it's like... You just care about them because of their charisma and their relationship. And they're actually pretty good guys. Just robbing banks. And you don't want them to get caught. Mm-hmm. But then you're also like... Well, I really don't want them to get caught. Because the banks don't give a shit about them.
Yeah, the
and
whole...
And their property. They're like... whatever.
Yeah,
sure. Okay.
I love that. Like the real bad guys were with the bank.
Yeah.
It was the bank.
Yeah.
Which I love it how they stole all the money from the same chain of banks.
Yeah.
Just to go... Which I thought the whole genius part of it, like taking it to the casino, changing out, was fucking brilliant. And then
right.
Them like basically giving the bank its money back just to keep their house afloat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Taken from the bank that they yeah. owe money. That's funny. It's funny, and it's like, it makes sense, and you go, would I do that?
It's a modern-day Robin Hood, really.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Exactly.
I also love how Chris Pine's in there. It's like, no, you're going to fax it today, and I'm going to fucking watch you do it. Like,
yep.
I loved that part.
Yep. Yeah, Chris Pine was like, he's super strong in the movie, but there's always an element of, like, compassion to him. There's always... What was I saying? Compassion.
Yeah.
Chris Pine. Compassion.
I also just love the comedic elements between Ben Foster and Chris Pine.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's another one of those, kind of like Manchester by the Sea, in the way of, like, the comedy comes from just the characters and their interaction and the simplicity of it. Like, it's not drawing any attention to it, just two people kind of bickering or something, making some snide comment that's not meant as a joke or a... Here's a gag, just kind of a simple little thing. It's not like a, oh my God, I'm going to die, it was so funny. But just enough to, like, chuckle, you enjoy them, you enjoy watching them, and, like, that makes you, therefore, care for them in the end.
Yeah.
And it's a sad but, like, fun ending.
Yeah, I mean, just, like, there's like when it gets really intense after they rob that bank and end up shooting two people, and Chris Pine gets shot, and then, of course... Which I love the whole changing the cars thing, too, and burying it. I thought that was brilliant, too.
Mm-hmm.
But them just, like, you know, when Ben Foster's like, you know, get out of here. Like, I love you. Get out. Get the fuck out of here. And then he ends up going, of course. And when he snipes Jeff Bridges' like, partner. And it's that intense,
yeah,
like,
what's his
sadness.
Name? That guy is great, too.
He was, too. Let's see. I got it pulled up here.
Kind of had a No Country for Old Men type of
kinda,
feel.
Modern Western
but,
feel.
Yeah, but such a better...
Gil Burningham.
Yeah, who's also in Wind River that I worked with.
Oh, sweet.
I didn't meet him or work with him personally, but he's in the movie. He actually has a really good part in the movie, that I'm thinking about who he is.
I do love also the brotherly dynamic with those two and the kind of comedic elements, because Jeff Bridges is giving him shit.
Yeah, it's like I said earlier, it's kind of like... they're a pair of brothers in their own sense, in that professional, we work together, but we work together all the time and we're close.
Yeah. Just that immense sadness that you could tell he felt when he found out his partner got shot was just fucking...
Oh, yeah. The way Jeff Bridges... That, in my eyes, was what gave him the Oscar nom. Because really, the character isn't anything crazy different than what he's done before.
Sure.
But there is a a moment. And that's the cool thing about Oscar nominations, for acting at least, is you can almost get one because of a moment.
Sure.
You know? As long as the rest of it's solid and the movie's good as a whole, but just because of, like, one thing you did that just really stood out and was completely real. And I feel like that was one of them. Is when he gets shot, his friend gets shot in the head, and then it's just completely, you just see it, like there's so much going on. He's pissed, he's shocked, he's sad, he can't believe it, and he's also taking cover so he doesn't get shot. Like, there's so many things going on right there, but he's able to, like, let us, the audience, in on the moment. And he did so good.
Yeah, then him just, like, grabbing that local just to get his revenge, like, fucking show me the back way, I'm gonna get this fucker.
Yeah.
And then him just, like, Ben Foster's character's, like, taking a minute to relax, and then just that fucking shot in the head, like.
Yeah, and I also loved his, what is his last name? He's a guy in the Comanche. His kind of, that's the thing I love about Ben Foster, is he's just unpredictable. In all of his parts he plays, he's like, there's so much, like, fire going on inside him. And sometimes, depending on the character, it might be a mellow type character, but there's always something just going on inside that keeps him, like, alive and fresh in all of the roles he plays.
Yeah. Just also, like, the weird kind of, like, friendship that gets built between Chris Pine and, like, Jeff Bridges at the end.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's like a level of respect.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a mutual
respect.
But
still, I don't get it and I don't like it, but I understand it.
Yeah, where he's like, hey, why don't you come on, have a drink sometime, we can finish the story. And Jeff Bridges, and of course using his True Grit voice throughout this whole movie, which I thought was funny. Just
it's
like
Jeff Bridges' voice.
Yeah.
But a little, like, slurrily.
Yeah. Which I thought that was kind of interesting. Like, he killed his brother, but he's like, there's a mutual respect for it.
Both brothers died, in a way.
Yeah, that's exactly, that's, I was going to say, that, yeah, that conversation at the very end, it's more of, I'm the law, but it was almost like the law didn't exist at that point. It was
because you're retired. He's like a retired cop.
They could both say the same thing to each other. He's like, "Well, you killed my friend. Well, you killed my brother, who died for me, basically, so I could have a life."
Well, yeah, like Jeff Bridges says, like, it's your fault because you set everything in motion. But then once he kind of realizes why he did it with, like, his ex-wife, like, this is their house. You know, he did it to, you know, make sure that his sons, you know, are well taken care of.
Is he the? Not to, like, go off on it, but that's another reason why I think this is a more complex story than Moonlight is. Mm. Not to, like, go into a whole conversation of arguing those two, but I think there's just more layers to something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. God, all the best pictures were so good, but it was just, like, a really interesting outcome this year with it all. But, yeah, Hell or High Water was a very complex but yet simple story. Mm. That is fun to watch. It's got some action. It's got some funny stuff. It's just a good movie.
Yeah,
and they don't
I
make movies like
that
anymore. And I love that Taylor Sheridan's kind of, like, making his mark of, like, just good movies that people really enjoy. He wrote Sicario, directed by one of the Oscar noms this year.
Sicario
Dennis,
was really good.
Dennis Villeneuve, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Villeneuve, yeah, he's one of my favorite directors. And I can't wait to see what else he's got coming up.
Like Wind River.
Like Wind River. Other than that.
That's all I'm waiting for right now.
I know. I want to see it.
Yeah, so I'm intrigued to check it out, too.
Austin's going to be so adorable in it.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'm in it. Who knows?
Sure.
Maybe.
Sure you would be.
Getting cut out of things is something Austin and I are both good at.
You have no control. Sometimes it just happens. You know, they got to shorten the story. Or
yeah.
I like that we both just kind of paused there and just looked at each other like,
breath of...
Yeah. Oddly enough, there's not really any fun facts about this movie on IMDb.
Fun fact, it's fucking great.
Yeah. There's a fact for you. Watch it. I also love that it's now gotten recognition, because I remember when it first came out and was in theaters, I was like, God, so many people need to see this movie.
I actually took Jesse to see it, like, opening weekend that it came out, because I was so excited about it. And my proof that it was good right away was the fact that Jesse did not fall asleep during it.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. It's really true.
Jesse will fall asleep in just about anything. And I've only gone to two movies ever with Jesse. And it was La La Land and Hell or High Water.
Well,
and
Deadpool.
Jesse. Oh, yeah, and Deadpool. But Jesse did like Deadpool. We were both just insanely exhausted. Yeah, that one, I don't put in the mix.
It was part of the road trip.
I even fell asleep during that, and that's one of my favorite movies, like comic book wise. And I've watched it numerous times.
Well, it's not to say that I fall asleep to a lot of movies that I love, but if I don't fall asleep, it usually entails that it keeps me thinking.
Yeah,
Hell or High Water and La La Land both did that.
Well, speaking of Jesse, Jesse's pick was Arrival.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Arrival. It was interesting. I was reading, just talking to some people at work, as well as reading the critics, some of the people who didn't like it, which I can understand why, because if you're going to watch a action-packed sci-fi, this is not it.
Which I don't think it was ever really billed to be an action-packed sci-fi.
Not at all.
So if anybody thought it was, they truly misinterpreted the trailer.
And that's how I feel about it, because the negative things that people had to say about it were that it was basically boring, which it's one of those films where it mainly wants you to think, and the communication, it was like Independence Day where the president talks to the aliens, just like a way better artistic version of it.
Yeah. Also great fucking cast. Amy Adams, Jeremy Renner, Forest Whitaker.
Since we're talking cast and Oscars on this, I have to go on my vent session again here. Often I kind of did on mine. This is nominated for Best Picture. It has so many just spectacular moments, yet where the fuck was Amy Adams' Oscar nomination?
Right.
True.
Because, I mean, how do you have this
more
Best
than
Picture?
One redhead
nominated. Yeah, it's an Oscar rule.
But how do you nominate this for Best Picture when the entire film revolves around her character?
Mm-hmm. Like, like anyone up there.
Character. It's a character. But, yeah.
But for real, it's like she killed it in that movie, and she carried the movie. And if you carry a movie that's Best Picture, not just like you carried the movie, because that's kind of your job as a lead. There's plenty of lead roles that were not nominee worthy, but hers was something different. And it was like there was actually a lot of layers to the character. It wasn't just
a lot of layers to her character.
Oh yeah,
it wasn't just the lady who's the linguist, you know, kind of thing. It was an actual person. I felt like when watching it, you know, you actually cared for her on a level that was like not just I don't want the lead to die or whatever because they're the person, but like I actually care for this human that I'm watching.
Well, it's got an interesting, like, way about it. The setup is, like, you see her daughter dying, you know, of cancer, and then you know, kind of cut to the whole, what it seems like her moving on to it, and then the aliens arrive, and then, of course, you know, throughout the storyline of her, you know, coming in there, communicating with the aliens, her, like, learning their language, you start to kind of, like, wonder what the hell's going on, because she keeps cutting back to the daughter and everything, but it's you kind of realize it's moments when she's asleep or kind of daydreaming or, you know, due to a lack of sleep. And then there's that moment, like, who is this girl? Like, who is this girl I keep seeing? Which I thought was a pretty good twist.
Which, to take it back to another Oscar nominee from a few years ago, all those flashbacks gave you a reason to care and to be concerned about her daughter.
Yeah.
Gravity, fuck you. All these years later, I want to say fuck you again to Gravity because they didn't do that at all, and we were supposed to give a shit about her daughter and her relationship with her daughter. Yeah, they gave us
kind of
zero
just a voice on the radio.
Yeah, they gave us zero reason to ever care about this, and Arrival showed how to do that properly.
Yeah. I thought it was a cool concept, too, that the more she learned about the alien language, the more, like, that was, like, the weapon that the aliens gave her was to be able to see the future.
And the biggest thing with it, and I kind of even told this to Jesse before he watched it, is it was so relative to today because the entire thing is about communication.
Mm-hmm.
And something that even when we're communicated with and given the proper tools as a culture, if something's different, we panic. And, you know, that's going to be the downfall of what ultimately destroys us. I mean, we have President Twitter Boy.
Yeah.
Like, he's scared to ever fucking communicate because he is under this crazy assumption that all of his news media is fake.
Yeah.
But somehow 140 characters behind a computer screen is real, like more real than actually just stating the facts. Like, you know, that's something that Arrival shows you, the power of true communication.
Yeah, I feel like if this happened while he was president, he'd run and high and tweet about it.
I know you were talking about the relevancy of it, and another aspect of it, I'm not sure if you mentioned it, is I also think it's like how are we today dealing with like immigration and like people who are foreign, you know? And it's like I thought it was just so funny but also frustrating watching the when it got to the point where everyone was like freaked out, they're going to start attacking us at any moment. You know, and all these people on the media like freaking out, losing their minds. These people, they're here to threaten us. They're here to kill us. This is, you know, we got to take care of them now. Just take them out, take them out. And I was like, oh my God, like they have no idea. And that's exactly how we are right now.
Well, even like the Chinese dictator, like she had to convince him, and then she realized that she convinces him through a future, like, you know, vision that she gets.
Right. Well, I mean, it's funny because, I mean, you. And not to steer it in a political direction, but, you know, you look at, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, we found out that, you know, there's a Russian spy ship just right off the coast over by Connecticut. And instead of, you know, working through diplomacy and stuff, Trump says in his own press conference, the best thing I could do right now is just shoot that thing out of the water. And it's just like, right, the best thing you can do right now is start a fucking war with Russia. Good job, you goddamn idiot. It's like if something like a rival was to happen, the best thing he could do is shoot it right out of the... It's like
shoot the aliens!
And it's so true, and we see that reaction, that knee-jerk reaction, instead of paying attention to communication.
Well, you kind of have that fear when they're interacting with the aliens, which I love that they named them Abbott and Costello, that you wonder, like, they could turn at any moment. You know, there's that fear, but... She just takes her suit off and, you know, there's nothing to fear. She just communicates with them more. You know, she is really genius about it, you know, using the whole, like, visual aids to communicate. Mm-hmm. And that's how they... And then that scene where she ends up going up to the spaceship and interacting with one of the aliens, like, face-to-face, I thought was, like, an incredible scene, too. It shot really well.
Yeah, it's shot beautifully. So, I know Austin and I talked on my episode about, you know,
The cinematography
on it. It's just... Oh, it's beautiful.
A scene that was, like, really cool and, like, gripping was the one where they're finding out that all the other countries, you know, they have all the other countries up on the board that they're talking to, and then, like, China goes down, they're no longer talking to anyone, and then the other person's not talking, and then all of a sudden, no one's talking to anyone, and now everyone's secluded, now the Earth isn't even unified.
Yeah.
Everyone's against each other. It was just, like, mayhem, and it's exactly...
To even steer it, because I see where you're going with it. President Dipshit has even talked about dismantling the UN. Like,
because it makes sense.
They're shutting off all that communication. Like, we're seeing, and it's crazy because Arrival, you know, was probably written 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's a prophecy.
That's a best picture right there.
I feel like we've kind of commandeered this because this is Jesse's movie here.
I haven't heard too much from you, buddy.
Oh, you're fine.
What did you like about it, Jesse?
I really liked the fact that it wasn't just about the aliens, but it actually brought it in simple terms of the relationship with her and her daughter.
Yeah.
It had beautiful moments where they didn't say very much. And I think that films like this, people are bored because they allow themselves to be bored.
Sure.
And it's a film that wants you to think and ponder and...
You'd have to, like...
And actually... do actual mental work instead of having the film do it all for you.
Yeah.
And so I really liked how it tied in with how it brought it back to love and family. And I think even some of the, on IMDb, I was looking at some of the ratings and people were talking about, that's exactly what they were saying that they did not like about it, how it was cliche. And I
really?
Think that, I think that a lot of the films nowadays are losing that. And so I appreciated how they were able to bring it back in such a beautiful way. Not just with the whole story in itself, but I love the freaking spaceships.
Yeah.
How they actually didn't even make any contact with the Earth. Mm-hmm. It was just really creative.
Well, even when they leave.
The anti-gravity part.
They kind of just disperse, you know, they kind of disappear into the clouds, which I thought was a cool effect, too.
Yeah.
So the inky circular alien language was created by Montreal artist Martin Bertrand, is also the artist's son who created Hannah's drawings.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I would love to see, like, a full alphabet. I wonder if they have a full alphabet of that.
I would love that, too.
I would love to, like, try to design a tattoo with that.
Oh, yeah. I thought the depiction of, like, the whole language, how it's, like, in certain sections of each of the circle was pretty cool. While the shape of the ship was decided early on, Denis Villeneuve had great difficulty imagining an interior that would allow humans to easily navigate through such a steep and vertical design. The later decision to turn gravity sideways offered an obvious and convenient solution for that. Which I thought that was a cool aspect of it as well. Dirty sci-fi is what director Denis Villeneuve and cinematographer Bradford Young called the look they created together for Arrival. Villeneuve wanted it to feel like this was happening on a bad Tuesday morning, like when you were a kid on the school bus on a rainy day and you dream while looking out of the window at the clouds. It's kind of that whole look to it, yeah, as well.
One thing, too, that we've kind of overlooked here, I think, is the beautiful kind of dichotomy between Jeremy Renner and Amy Adams' character,
yeah,
in this. I mean, I think that their relationship is just... It's beautiful the way that they kind of cultivate into telling, you know, more of their story without being so heavy-handed of, like, here is their story. Like, they go about it in a very crafty way.
Yeah. So, speaking of her character, in the whiteboard shot where Louise writes the big question, immediately above the question is the standard formula for entropy, the arrow of time, which has that whole, you know, she asks him, like, how do you know the future? Like, we see all time. You know, due to the fact with that language, they wanted, because they mentioned that whole, like, 3,000 years from now, you know, we're, yeah, helping you, like, we need your help, which I thought was also, too, really great. In the novella, The Story of Your Life by Ted Shing, 9 looking glasses arrive in America, the total of 112 worldwide. The film reduces that number and alters the dimensions to more profound effect. I like that, too, about how they're trying to get the world to work together. They're giving each of them a piece of the puzzle to kind of unify and come together for that, which I thought was a cool aspect of it as well. Let's see. As soon as director Denis Villeneuve finished the film, he began work on Blade Runner 2049.
Cannot wait.
Yeah, I can't wait for that either.
Especially now that we saw yesterday, was it, that it's going to be October is the start release?
I think so, yeah.
I think that's what we saw. Which really makes me excited because that kind of speaks to the volumes that they're putting that film together with.
And it's Villeneuve, I believe.
So the two main aliens in this movie are called Abbott and Costello, the same names as the aliens in The Hounds of Bakersville, or Baskerville. I really like the look of the aliens, too. What did you guys think of the Hephalopods?
I liked them. I thought it was cool just the way they had them. Very squid-like and...
Yeah. And then you get a better look of them when she goes one-on-one with them, yeah, which is pretty awesome. Nick Matthew was previously attached to direct.
No idea who that is.
I don't either.
Austin?
Nick Matthew?
Matthew.
I'll look him up. Yeah, I have no idea who that is.
So what General Shang whispers to Louise is, in war, there are no winners, only widows.
I like that.
Yeah.
Say that again.
What General Shang whispers to Louise is, in war, there are no winners, only widows. That's what she told him on the phone call that his wife said, his last words with his wife.
Say Matthew or Matthews?
Matthew. Let's see how to spell that. M. So N-I-C is his first name. Last name, M-A-T-H-I-E-U. I haven't heard of him before.
Yeah. Austin's pulling him up right now. I've never...
Yeah.
Never even heard the name.
So, the written language used by the Hephalopods is mostly... most probably inspired by the Inzu, a calligraphy symbol from Zen Buddhism, which expresses a moment when the mind is free to let the body create and symbolizes... absolute enlightenment, strength, elegance, the universe, and the Mu, which is the void. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
It definitely is.
So we will move on to our final film, which would be my choice, Hidden Figures, which I thought was amazing, well done. We were actually talking about this yesterday, all of us. It's kind of sad that this was never taught to us in school. Like, we never learned about it.
Yeah, I think it was Janelle Monáe that brought up how, you know, this was an important part of history that, was just kind of glossed over. She never learned about it in school, and yeah, it's true. You know, it is something that we never learned in school.
The space race in general.
Yeah,
yeah.
We learned a very narrow view of what the space race was, and it's really kind of fucked up when
we
you think about it.
We got the factory version, the like quick and cheap. Oh, it was a.
We got the raw America version.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's the way. I think that's the best way to say of how fucked up of the version we got was just raw America's great. We won the space race.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Also, by the way, amazing cast with this. Taraji P. Henson, Octavia Spencer, Janelle Monáe, Kevin Costner, Kristen Dunst. I love seeing Jim Parsons in this.
I love seeing a movie that Kevin Costner's in where he's not sitting on bleachers.
Yeah.
He was thinking a lot.
Yes, he was still thinking a lot, but he was never sitting on bleachers.
He was eating a lot as well.
Yeah. Mahershala Ali, sorry.
I'm going to fucking correct you this entire time. Yeah.
Christopher, we just heard all these names like 30 times.
I know, I'm just not good at pronouncing names. I really love just how they, like, Jim Parsons' character's clearly an asshole in this, not wanting her to put her name on the reports when she clearly is the one who's good, even like her, like fighting to get in that. Like, if you want me to help, I need to be in that conference room.
I almost didn't like. I loved it, but at the same time, part of me was like, I don't like seeing Jim Parsons mean. I like Jim Parsons.
Yeah.
Seeing him as a mean character made me kind of sad.
Yeah. I also just like that scene where she's, you know, Kevin Costner's like, you're constantly. It takes you 45 minutes to go to the bathroom. You're never here. And just that whole scene where she just yells at him, lays into him, like, look, there is only one colored bathroom here. I have to run across, like, 2 miles.
That was
and
a great
back.
Scene. That was definitely the most impactful scene.
I thought so, too.
Had that scene not been in there, in my opinion, the whole movie would have been okay.
Yeah.
I think that movie, or that scene, was what made me, like, I loved the movie, but once it got to that point, I was like, oh, and then I, like, was actually really invested from then on. Before then, they did a good job of getting me to that point, but it was that point where I was like, okay, yeah, now I can, like, I
both literally and figuratively, you become invested because the barriers were broken down.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of shows us what it was like, not only being a woman back then, but also being, you know, someone of color back then as well. Well, there's several scenes that make me kind of tear up in this, and one of them was just Kevin Costner seeing the coffee pot and peeling it off, and then you cut to him just knocking down the, like, sign, you know, which I feel like kind of got ruined with the whole, like, we all pee the same color here at NASA sign. Probably could have done without that, but I still feel that, like, the impact of, like, that scene of him just breaking down that sign that said, no more, like, everybody gets to use the same bathroom. Like, no more of this. Like,
yeah, and what one episode we recorded earlier of my show, I kind of talked about, too, how When I went and saw Hidden Figures, so there just so happened to be just within my eye shot a gentleman that was African American, older gentleman, and his wife that were just sitting there, and you know nothing pulled at my heartstrings more than watching them react to things that they lived through, and seeing them tear up at moments. I mean, it was that had to have been one of the most powerful things to me. Aside from just, you know, how amazing the story and everything was, it was seeing people that had lived through this and seeing their reaction.
I also, another scene that kind of got me teared up is when her husband kind of, you know, her husband's kind of like, I think it was the Catherine character. Let's see. Mary's character, yes. Janelle
Monáe.
Her husband's kind of telling her, like, she shouldn't go to get that degree. She shouldn't go to night school. It's never going to happen. And then there's that scene where he comes in and just gives her those pencils, you know, those pens, and says, like, I support you. And then also that scene where she's giving the speech to the judge, I thought was really great, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I mean, I even love it when she finally goes to night school and just, like, the reaction of everybody there, because it was just so out of the ordinary for them to see this.
The movie did a good job of balancing, because there's like the main storyline.
Yeah.
And then two sub-storylines. And it did a good job of rotating through all of them and not, it felt balanced, and I also cared about all of them. Sometimes when a movie gets to that, like that, I'm like, I care about this one and kind of that one, not really this one. Or there's just a level of how much I really enjoyed certain storylines, but I actually thought all of them were really good.
Well, I love how each of them had their own fight, despite, you know, the main fight of, like, you know, womanhood and, you know, the whole racial issue, but they all each had their own fight. Like, Octavia...
And I'm sure there were... Sorry, I didn't mean to...
No, go ahead.
I'm sure there were other women who were in that, like, district who you could have brought into it all, but they probably picked those three according to, like, how separate their storylines are. You know what I mean? I know there's stories throughout the entire group at that time, but, you know, of course you can't write a movie around, like, 30 individuals.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd be interested to see what some of the other women's story was like.
Oh, yeah.
In that time.
I really like the whole thing with Octavia Spencer's character, Dorothy, where she wants that, like, manager position, but she keeps getting, like, you know, taken down a peg by Kirsten Dunst. And so she ends up, like, going to the library.
Is it Kirsten or Kirsten?
Kirsten Dunst. She ends up going to the library and start teaching it herself. And that scene with the whole, like the security guard at the library just being just so hurtful to her and her kids. And then you see her, like, she stole the book and she's like, you know, telling her kids, you don't steal things, but this is different. And she ends up going in there secretly fixing the computer. And once they notice, like, you know, she did this, she kind of, like, is able to get her whole team in there and kind of overcomes that. And that whole scene between her and Kirsten Dunst in the bathroom, like, Kirsten Dunst is like, you know, look, I'm not... not as bad as I seem, you know? And she's like, yeah, I'm sure that's what you tell yourself to sleep at night. I thought was, like, really just a great backhanded comment. Or...
Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly. Doesn't Kirsten Dunst, like, kind of come around it by the end? Or does she always stay kind of...
She does come around by the end.
But still, that whole shit between her and then at the beginning was, you know... I really like, of course, Dorothy's character... You know, kind of, you know, focusing on that and, you know, showing, you know, her strengths. But also there's kind of that love story with it as well, which I understand for the, like, movie itself, it was kind of rushed. But still, it's kind of great to see. That whole proposal scene, like, got me teared up pretty well, too. Like, when they're at dinner, her kids are there, and, you know, he ends up coming in and just places the ring down, and he's, you know, giving his whole speech, too. And he says, I know not only do I have to marry you, but I have to marry your daughters. I thought it was really a great heartfelt scene as well.
No, it absolutely wasn't. I honestly think that's one of the bigger reasons, too, that Mahershala Ali won the Oscar. Aside from, you know, that he had a great performance in Moonlight.
Yeah.
I think the fact that he also had a great,
like,
performance in Hidden Figures as well.
He got a Best Supporting Actor because of two performances. Usually other performances throughout the year account. It's like, all right, if the rest of them are good, then we'll, like, believe in this one.
Yeah.
But... It's kind of was like, in my opinion, like, his performance in Moonlight was great, but I wouldn't really say an Oscar winner. But matched that up with his performance in this, yeah, I think, like, both of those combined, like, he showed range. And
yeah, I loved his character in Hidden Figures, and, you know, I thought he did really well.
Yeah.
There's that whole scene where he's, you know, apologizing for judging her, you know, when they first meet, and then... There's that whole scene, too, where he, you know, is, you know, they kind of start dating and he wants to kiss her and she's, you know, I haven't kissed anybody in 15 years, so that's that whole nervousness to it, but I just thought those two together were great. And I loved, like, seeing at the end, too, which is one of my favorite things about, like, based on a true story movies, is at the end they'll have, like, the nice little facts of what happened on, and those two stayed married, like, throughout the whole time.
Yeah, it was the ending before and after pictures.
Yeah.
Very tender.
I thought so, too.
I actually left before I saw
you
I had to go.
Bastard.
How dare you?
I had to go to work.
I had to potty.
Hmm?
You have to potty.
No, I had to go to work.
You had to potty.
Okay, whatever conversation is on me having to go potty.
I just thought overall this was, like, an amazing... Yeah.
Why do you want me to? Or
what the fuck is happening right now?
Trying to convince me I did? Or what is the deal?
Are you trying to, like... Like, kind of nudge him to go pee?
No, he just did.
Oh, okay. Very confused by that whole.
That's some podcast magic right there.
It was so strange.
Yeah.
Ignore Tim. He's creepy.
Yeah.
And he almost killed a family.
Yeah. You've been really fucked up on this trip, guy.
Farting. Been going through a lot.
I know. You've been farting in families' faces.
That was fun.
That was fun. Without a beat.
That
yeah.
sounded like in Mission Impossible 3 when family. Philip Seymour Hoffman talks about
yeah,
killing
like,
that girl. That was fun.
I don't know where that fact came.
Kind of just like
Tim likes to create his own truth. It's okay.
I know.
They are called alternative facts, Jesse.
Oh, wow. Oh, there it is.
There you go.
Overall, though, getting back on track, overall, I felt like this was a very heartwarming and just emotional film that kind of like was inspirational in its own sense as well. Like I said, it's
not in some sense. I mean, the entire fucking thing was pretty
yeah.
inspirational.
Yeah.
I just had a stroke halfway
wow.
through that.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. I totally worded that.
It's very new.
I totally worded that bad. It is
room seven.
Inspirational
Jesse,
in every sense.
It's by the door.
Yeah, I worded that bad. It's very inspirational and heartwarming in all aspects. I walked out of that theater very much just loving the fuck out of that movie. And so we had to wait locally for it to come into theaters for a bit.
Only a week.
Yeah, but still, that was a bit of a wait. I was really excited to go watch that.
That's pretty usual.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, literally, with every movie.
Yeah.
They have an L.A. New York release, and then a week later they come out nationwide.
Yeah. So, Taraji...
Why are you cool, Tim?
No, I just listened to what the trailer says.
Yeah. So when Taraji P. Henson signed on for the lead role, she met with real-life Katherine Johnson, who was 98 years old, to discuss the character she was about to portray. Henson learned that Johnson had graduated from high school at 14 and from college at 18 and wow. was still as lucid as anyone years younger. After the film was screened for Johnson, she expressed her genuine approval of Henson's portrayal, but wondered why anybody would want to make a film about her life.
So that's cool.
Yeah, she's very humble. That's who they brought out for the Oscars, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think she's the only person from that story who's still alive, right?
Yeah, and then she made a point of being able to kind of tell the whole audience, gave her a standing ovation. Thank you.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome. While John Glenn did specifically request that Katherine Johnson review all the numbers of the French itself in mission before he would agree to go through with it, he did so weeks before the mission actually took place, not when the countdown to launch was nearing at Cape Canaveral.
I wonder if John Glenn got to see this before he passed away.
I don't know. I kind of wonder, too.
Because, I mean, it came out a month after he passed.
Yeah. I think it did.
So, John Glenn has a special place in mine and my brother's heart. When we became Eagle Scouts, my mom had reached out to some family friends that knew John Glenn. And we got signed letters from him congratulating us on our Eagle Scouts. And so I've always had that special place in my heart for him. And so to be able to kind of see some of his story told mm-hmm. there too, it was really, really kind of cool to see that.
So I didn't know this. Octavia Spencer appeared with Jim Parsons in an episode of Big Bang Theory. She was a clerk at the DMV.
Wait, who'd you say?
Octavia
Spencer. Oh, yes, I do remember. Yeah. For some reason, I heard you say that. My brain went to Taraji P. Henson.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't remember it being. And then I was like, wait.
This film reunites Octavia Spencer and Kevin Costner, who previously appeared together in Black and White Black or White in 2014. This is Kirsten Dunst's highest grossing film in the U.S. outside of Spider-Man in 2002.
Really? That long?
Yeah.
She's not really done too
Yeah,
many
she hasn't
big
really
movies.
Done
I guess
too
everything
many
that she's been doing has been TV kind of lately.
Yeah. Bigger.
Like with Fargo.
A lot of
and
indies.
Yeah.
She's done, yeah.
This is Kevin Costner's third film about the Kennedy administration. He previously appeared in JFK in 1991 and 13 Days in 2000. So the film accurately portrays what was believed to be a heat shield failure upon reentry. The film did not provide further explanation, but it turns out a micro switch on the landing bag, which is the heat shield was connected to, was faulty. That was caused by an indication that the landing bag was deployed, thus the heat shield probably would have not ablated properly. The flaming debris seen upon the reentry was not the heat shield, but the retro rocket pack, which wasn't jettisoned in an attempt to hold the landing bag in place at the time. However, John Glenn had no way of knowing that.
Like, knowing what we know now about dangerous space travel can still be... Like, I can't even imagine in those early days.
Oh,
like,
I know.
What those astronauts...
Hey, we're going to launch you into fucking space right now.
Yeah.
And okay. You're going to, like, come back into the Earth's atmosphere like a fucking fireball through hell.
Ooh, that whole scene was, like, intense, too. Like, waiting for him to land.
Yeah, even though you know the outcome of it, it still was like, oh my God, is he going to make it? Is he going to make it?
Well, this, like, you know, mixes two of my favorite film genres. Inspirational true stories, and I love stuff about space. I love the whole astronaut, like, Apollo 13, like, is a great film that I very much love as well. Well,
and of course, Muppets in Space.
Oh, of course. I mean, that's...
true story.
Yeah. Well, as we're winding down, where can everybody follow you guys?
I'll go first. You can follow me on Instagram at I'm Austin Grant and Twitter at I'm Austin Grant. And Facebook is just Austin Grant.
Awesome.
Then I am...
Okay.
I think some of my sleep deprivation is starting to hit me again.
Jesus Christ.
God, oh, boy. Talk.
He's kidding.
Boy.
Like, should I? Do you want me to give your tags?
I'll go ahead. I'll
yeah, go ahead, Jesse, while he works
I'm
through
his... I'm at J. Price Knight on Instagram as well as Twitter.
Oh, my God.
Awesome. Tim, are you okay to go on?
No,
he can't even put the mic.
He's
okay.
Laughing so hard, it's that silent laugh. There we go.
What the fuck is wrong with
that
you?
That was a straight up just came
up. Oh, he literally fell onto the bed and then came up laughing.
I don't know where he was just about to say his freaking name.
Yeah,
I was social
what's
media.
What's so funny?
It's all right. So I'm.
It wasn't quite as funny. I enjoyed seeing Tim laughing on his stomach on the bed for some reason.
I don't
just,
know.
That visual.
Did you need me to say your tags for you? Well, he can't even. He can't even do it.
Oh my God.
Fuck me. He's gone. We've lost him. Tim is a. Tim is
man down. Man down.
He's for the
get
listeners.
It together,
Tim,
man.
Tim is on his back right now.
You can say your handles.
I don't know why. It just overcame me.
You can.
I am on Twitter at Tim Drake. Instagram.
Twim Drake?
Did I say Twim Drake?
Yeah, you said Twim.
Yeah.
at Tim Drake. No cough in the middle there.
Tim Cough Drake.
Instagram Tim Drake 42. What else am I on? Snapchat. And that was still a social media question. Not what else I might be on now.
Oh,
man. Snapchat Tim Drake 42.
And your podcast on the mic.
Oh, yeah. And I have a podcast, too, Austin. And Christopher.
Yeah.
And Jesse.
It's like, oh, okay, I'm not the only one.
And that's at On The Mic Podcast. And you can see the website, onthemicpodcast.com.
Yeah, definitely check out the episode that Tim and Austin did for the Oscars, what their Oscar picks was. I think it's the recently released episode, right?
We actually both predicted that La La Land would win and then lose, and Moonlight would win. Overall,
we did. It was
yeah.
Crazy.
We completely predicted it.
Yeah, definitely go check out.
It was
episode.
A full Nostradamus moment.
That's a big word. Don't use.
Yeah.
This.
Don't. I don't know what's happening right now. you can follow the podcast facebook.com/trustyournerds on Twitter at trustyournerds, and if you have a recommendation for a movie or a theme, email us at trustyournerds@gmail.com. I'm your host, Christopher James. Have a good night.
Yogurt.